Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to Unblocking Crypto, episode 154. Al, great to see you. Another great week.
Yeah, good to see you, Jason.
So I know we did some predictions last week, which were a lot of fun, but it's interesting to see how some of it is already starting to come into play. We had two more U.S. states announce that they were looking into digital assets reserves. North Dakota came out, and they were one of them, although they didn't really mention Bitcoin only. They talked about digital assets, so they could be open for some other things. And then New Hampshire did say Bitcoin only. They mentioned even up to 10%, which is a big number, that one of the bigger numbers that we've heard. And what's interesting about New Hampshire is they kind of said since, 1920, they've been the state to hold the first presidential primary. So they want to keep the tradition going and be the first Bitcoin strategic reserve by a state too. So we'll see what happens with that. But what's kind of cool is the Satoshi Action Fund, which kind of works with a lot of these states. They're predicting 20 states this year to introduce some sort of Bitcoin bill in 2025. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I've read through a little bit of those. And I think Dennis Porter, who does some live Twitter, they're spaces is what they're called, Twitter spaces or X spaces, where it's kind of a live, it's almost like a live podcast or live video conference, and you can listen in. And so I listened to those. And I mean, you know, it's tough to tell if you've got a few state representatives that are willing to put together a bill, or if you've got something that has a high likelihood of passing and things like that. So, but it's just a numbers game. You know, it's almost like, hey, a couple of states have proposed legislation that emboldens some of the Bitcoin friendly or crypto friendly representatives to pass or to propose some legislation. Well, one of the states is going to pass legislation, and that's going to embolden the other states to pass the legislation. And so to me, I think we'll see a bit of a, like, gradually, then suddenly with the 50 states, where you see one state go, and then a few months pass by, and then a second state, and then a few months go by, and then two more, and then four and eight, you know, like as this thing builds. But with 50 states, and there's a kind of a competitive nature there, I think you see those things roll out fairly quickly and grow fairly quickly. So I wouldn't expect any of them to happen until after Trump kind of gets in and starts to pave the way, which we can talk about next.
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody's actually working right now. So to hear this coming out is great, but there are zero state representatives that are back working that I know of. Most of this stuff is going to happen probably in February at the earliest anyways. But I think even New Hampshire came out and said they believe it's the last state to do this loses, right? So, I mean, it is going to be that game theory that we've talked about before.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to hear, and I don't know if they're getting words given to them by kind of like the Satoshi Action Fund or kind of half lobbyists for the crypto industry or Bitcoin. A lot of times these politicians are saying phrases and ideas that are right in line with these Bitcoin guys that have been in it forever. You know, like the first one wins the most and the last one loses. And, you know, you're thinking beyond just, hey, we want to get this done because it's good for our state and we'll bring jobs and we might have some innovation and bring in some companies. You know, that's kind of a short-sighted thing. We don't want to lose like 50 states. And you're talking about, you know, now you're talking about like, hey, this thing's going to be such a big influence on the economy or financial innovation and things like that, that you're talking about losing as a state. So to me, I think that's a good sign. Whether it's just impossible to get a read on if the politician's in it or if they know some words to say so it looks like they're in it. But I'll take it either way, because this stuff's going to happen. And I mean, I think it's going to happen fairly quickly. You know, if you're done talking about states, I'm happy to jump to the next piece.
Well, let me talk one more other state thing. So Oklahoma just proposed the Bitcoin Freedom Act. So to me, this is kind of really innovative. They are going to give trying to give employees and vendors the option to conduct business in Bitcoin versus USD, right? So, I mean, they don't even expect it to be heard until February when they're back, right? But, I mean, if Oklahoma does something like this, then this is kind of a game changer on how everyone in the U.S. will look at Bitcoin moving forward.
Oh, yeah. And I've been hearing stuff like that from some of these states, you know, like you're going to have the freedom to self-custody. And, you know, these bills that are included in there, just because, well, at least over the last 4 years, it seemed like everything was under attack and anything was up for grabs as far as the federal level went. So it seems like the states were kind of playing defense for their citizens on the self-custody side.
I think Oklahoma did that last year. I think Texas has done it for sure, too. And there's probably a couple other states as well.
Florida might have done it.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. All right, you said you wanted to talk about Trump.
Yeah, so, you know, these states and kind of the action that they're moving forward with or proposing, you know, the federal level is going to kind of pave the way for them to make it okay, is the way I see it. And their Washington Post had an article on Bitcoin and crypto and Trump. And, you know, this transition team that Donald Trump's put together, David Sacks is kind of on the head of the crypto AI group. And this is something that Trump didn't do last time because everyone thought he was going to lose. He was fairly surprised that he won. He didn't put this transition stuff together until January, you know, 8 years ago. And this time, as soon as he won, well, he was naming the transition team before he won at the top. And now, I mean, that's why we get all these appointees and we're able to kind of talk about them and do these over the last several months, is because all of this stuff's put into place. And so it's been kind of nice because you get a little glimpse into what things are going to happen and little things leak and, you know, all that. So the article talked about they're already discussing the legislative strategy. So that's good, right? Because it's not just going to be all executive orders. It's going to be, okay, how do we put a strategy together so we get things through Congress? And what do we need to do? And how do we need to do it? And what are the important pieces? And then the executive orders they expected, one was on the debanking. And so I assume that is, you know, the article didn't go into a lot of detail there, but I assume that is basically anti-choke point 2.0, where the federal government's pressuring the FDIC and banks and others to not bank people that are involved in crypto, but especially businesses that are involved in crypto. And so that's a good one, even though it's an executive order, not legislation. Fine. It sets the tone. And the other one was essentially the repeal of SAB 121 so that banks can custody Bitcoin and crypto without holding dollar for dollar reserves, which was prohibitive for banks. So that would open up things. I mean, it's kind of a soft executive order to pass because BNY Mellon kind of got approval around it. And so, you know, everybody else is eventually, but it's going to be the big guys first. Why not go ahead and clear the way so that smaller and more nimble banks can start to do this stuff and add it to their portfolio so that they can do it. And then, you know, in the article, the quote I wrote was the Trump team made it clear that this is a priority. So I think we talked maybe even last week that I was like, hey, day one, I'm really looking at, because if he does any one single pro Bitcoin, pro crypto thing on day one, I consider that to be a victory. But this article made me think, okay, maybe that's a low bar. Maybe there's going to be more to it. And, you know, that's a huge signal, man. The day one stuff, really, people pay attention to what gets done on day one, because that's an indicator of the priorities for the administration for the next 4 years. So whatever we can get done in 2 years legislatively, let's go. And I'm a little more optimistic about some of the things coming out of the Trump camp, and maybe that's not just some empty campaign promises, but it's going to be some actual action when he gets in.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the Biden administration, before they leave, is trying to throw as many rocks at Trump as possible. So the DOJ just approved the sale of about 69,000 Bitcoin from the Silk Road seizure, which I guess the good news is that's not going to happen anytime soon. There's a process that has to be followed that was way pre-crypto, and it is a very strict process, so it's going to take some time. But that means that we had talked about 69,000 possibly going straight to the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve. It's probably not going to happen that way. And that's not great, right? But it is what it is. The other thing that's crazy on top of that is the CFPB, which is Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You can probably imagine which senator in Massachusetts was the one that came up with this idea. It just filed a last minute interpretive rule that would grant the authority to regulate digital asset wallets as financial institutions offering electric funds transfers. So the quick piece of that is, and so MetaMask is owned by Consensus. The senior advisor of MetaMask kind of came out and tweeted, "Hacked because you believe that fashion model in Malaysia needed $5,000 to fly to see you. Don't worry, your wallet may have to cover it." It is crazy that this is even being an interpretive rule, but it's just another like anti-crypto thing that they're trying to get through before they don't have the power to do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of put it on the list. I feel like this is like a tenant that knows they're not going to get their security deposit back. So when they're moving out, they're just like banging furniture against the walls. Like they just don't care about the condition that they leave this thing in for the next guy. When you talk about the 69,000 Bitcoin that got approved for sale, you know, that to me, the timing's too fishy, right? And I'm not a politician, but I've gotten a glimpse behind the curtain. And I know how those phone calls work, where it's like, hey, we need to get this thing. We want to get this thing pushed. You know, Trump wants to keep these 200,000 Bitcoin. There's 69,000 that are tied up in this legal battle where, you know, people are trying to claim the Silk Road. These are Silk Road Bitcoin, right?
Correct.
And so they were trying to claim the Silk Road Bitcoin. And so it's tied up in court. Well, like you said, nobody's working right now. Like nobody was working over Christmas. Maybe the last time that they really put any work in was early November. And then in early January, a ruling comes down prior to January 20. So to me, it smells like phone calls were made like, hey, go ahead and wrap this up and get this done before the inauguration. The timing's too coincidental, and coincidences in politics are usually rare. You know, there's just a lot of manipulation and influence that comes in those phone calls and arm twisting. I mean, you know, when Trump does it to the Ukraine to get the prosecutor removed, then he gets impeached. But those calls are happening all day, every day at every level of politics. So to me, that's fishy. And I'm not going to say there's a conspiracy or anything like that, but it's certainly fishy. But on the flip side, when Trump takes over, if they're not sold, there's probably phone calls he can make or his guys can make that twist the arms to say, hey, we need to find an avenue to get this thing back in line and we want to hold on to these Bitcoin. Or, you know, if they have to go to an auction, then okay, fine, the federal government can bid on that auction. I you know, there's probably a way to get this thing to happen so that it occurs, but it's the same with the IRS trying to pass the rule where everybody had to take screenshots of their wallets by December 31st for this safe harbor thing. But as they changed the tax rules that I barely knew about, and I'm like scrambling at the last minute to kind of move some Bitcoin around. And I'm like literally at New Year's Day at 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up to check the blockchain to make sure that transactions were confirmed. And like, and then what do they do a week later? You know, we're going to have to back off of this. It's, you know, this is a little onerous and you know, we're not, oops, we don't need to do it. It the same as the if you own a business, you have to give them your driver's license and address for all the owners of the business. And because they're, you know, FinCEN's got all these responsibilities. My wife was freaking out about it. We got to do this. We got to do that. Her aunt, oh man, we got to sign up for all this stuff. Look out. And I'm like, this doesn't matter. They're not going to go after every small business for $10,000. There's more LLC, there's more businesses than people. So this isn't something that they can do. Like, just chill out. And like, you know, sometime in December, I did mine. You know, 3 days before, whatever, between Christmas and New Year, they're like, ah, you know, you don't have to do that. I'm like, I knew we didn't have to do that. If you had said it 2 weeks earlier, I wouldn't have done it at all. So, you know, it's just kind of this crappy government just swinging mud thing at the end of the day. I really think it sucks. But it's, you know, I do feel like it's a make work project for the Biden administration to just make it more difficult and give the Trump administration more things to do. And it's like a peaceful transition of power. But oh, by the way, here's a crap sandwich. Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's very true. What's exciting to your point is that the people that Trump is putting into place are definitely very pro crypto. We've talked about Cynthia Lummis, who's a senator in Wyoming. She was just tapped to lead a new subcommittee that's focused on digital assets. And that's going to be an offshoot of the Senate Banking Committee, which is going to be led by, blanking on his name.
Tim Scott?
Yes. Yeah. So who's also very pro crypto. So, I mean, we're starting to see a lot of this kind of fall into place where they're going to be treating it completely different than they have in the past. So it is getting exciting, but at this point, it's still like a week away before Trump gets in, and it just can't happen fast enough to have the Biden administration quit doing crap, stupid crap left and right.
I totally agree. I couldn't be more tired of this. I'm looking forward to, like, with politicians, man, they're like sailboats without a rudder. When the wind starts blowing one way, this is the way we're going. And they start to change their tune. And then when the winds change, their sails change and they get pushed in the other direction and they start changing their tune. I mean, when Elizabeth Warren was pressed on Bitcoin and crypto by John Deaton in the debates that they had at the state level, she was very neutral. Oh, we just want Bitcoin and crypto to follow the same rules as everybody else. And in real life, she's like, we're going to make up new rules that make it impossible for Bitcoin and crypto because they're so shady. And then feeding the New York Times bad information so that she can cite her own article and bad data in a congressional hearing so it goes on the record. Like, the shape political moves possible. And then when the winds start to shift and she might lose an election or lose a lot of voters because of Bitcoin, there goes the change in direction. And then it's almost like all the things she said before that she can just ignore.
Yeah, it is very frustrating. I was reading about Polymarket too, and we talked a lot about Polymarket last year during all the election stuff. Well, what's interesting is the CFTC just sent Coinbase a subpoena for customer information related to Polymarket. And not saying they need it, but they could possibly get it in the future because they're apparently now coming after Polymarket. And Polymarket's really not allowed to do anything in the US, which is kind of funny now. It's also about to not be allowed to do anything in Singapore because the Singapore gambling regulator just blocked access to Polymarket for the way that it handled the US-based elections. And they're saying you now are going to get fines up to $10,000 or 6 months in prison. So Polymarket's, I mean, they're going to ban Singaporeans just like they did the French when the French did this last year, right? So it's crazy because, once again, this is the US founder that created this. They're not allowed to do anything in the US. So there's this ton of business that's happening outside of the US. Now, I guess Kalshi is US-based and apparently approved. It did just name Donald Trump Jr. as a advisor, which is kind of interesting too.
I find that interesting too.
So, but yeah, it's amazing how much these governments are going after companies that are helping or theoretically growing GDP in general. And they're kind of fighting against governments and our own governments, right? I mean, I was listening to Zuckerberg on Joe Rogan, and it was amazing to hear how much the US government is fighting Meta, right? And you would think Meta being a US-based company, they would want the US government would be on their side. But when they're the first one coming after them, it just opens up the floodgates for the rest of the countries and the rest of the world to come after them too. It's crazy.
No, it's super short-sighted and odd to me because, I mean, there's seven companies that are bolstering the entire stock market, and Meta's one of them. So, you know, these guys love to kind of pat themselves on the back about the performance of the economy when they're in office. It's tough to go after Meta because they're, you know, whole digit percentages of the stock market's performance in the last 2 years. So you can't. I don't get it, man. I never understand politicians. They fight these battles that don't make sense. I mean, like, I am like, alcohol is the worst. And it's like, oh man, liquor stores are essential and it's okay for us to have 25 million, you know, alcoholics and we're not really doing anything about it. I guess there's a lot of lobbyists there and there's a lot of tax dollars because there's some sin tax on liquor and alcohol sales. And, you know, but it's like that alcohol, they promote. Crypto, they attack. Like, what? Like, I feel like we're, you know, if you're looking at what kind of crashes people's lives, like, are you really, you know, why are you picking winners and losers just because one of them's new and one of them's been around, you know, since the beginning of man? Like, you know, to me, I don't get it. It's like in America, some unhealthy things are promoted. You know, you can buy a box of Fruit Loops anywhere you want, and some. some potential, like there's potential good that can come from Bitcoin and crypto innovation and work and jobs and that whole industry. They're against it. So it's almost like, you know, the old guard has the lobbying, and if you're a politician, you know, all these things have been on the shelves forever, whether they're good or bad. It's just the population doesn't really fight a battle about it. It's so they just let that stuff roll. And then they just fight tooth and nail against something like crypto and Bitcoin or Polymarket or, you know, all these things. And like, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but you can bet on baseball games pitch by pitch. You can bet if the next pitch is a ball or strike on your phone. Why would Polymarket get me under attack here? This doesn't make any sense to me. Like, so go figure, man. Maybe Polymarket needs to get into the mafia so that they can have the influence just like the gambling world. Like, it's all, once you get into Bitcoin long enough, you're like, this whole thing is a joke.
Yeah. Well, Polymarket did get some bad press because they were, I mean, it's an open betting market, right? So there was bets all on the wildfires in LA. And people were saying that's just disgusting. And that's going to create other people to go create fires so they can win the bet. Like, the stuff people get offended by these days is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you got crazy people starting fires in California. Polymarket is very low on the list as to, like, I don't know how many homeless people and illegal immigrants are on Polymarket, but I've seen several of them get busted for starting fires and destroying property. So, you know, like, as an engineer, you know, you always kind of try to figure out what the problem is first and then go find a solution for it. And as a politician, it's like, hey, just throw out a bunch of solutions. Who cares if you actually solved the problem?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this last administration has always been regulation by enforcement. So how can we make the most money by fining them for doing something, even if we never told them it was not allowed to be done? So Coinbase was also in the news because they had a small win. So back in 2023, the SEC sued Coinbase along with everybody else, right? But Coinbase submitted a motion that was in order to see how and if crypto assets should be subject to securities law. And the judge just agreed and is moving that up to the Second Circuit, which I think it's right now at the district level. So the Second Circuit has a lot more weight. And hopefully the Second Circuit will see something positive, which will affect a lot of these other lawsuits that are going on. So I'm intrigued to see what happens. It's a win for now because it's moving up, I guess, assuming we hear something positive from the courts, which we've been hearing a lot of positive things from the courts for the most part, but who knows what's going to happen these days. So yeah, well, to be determined there.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the SEC is losing most of these. So, you know, I'm excited to see kind of how bad they lose this one.
So if we go from losing to winning, I want to bring up MicroStrategy. We've done that for 10 weeks in a row now. So
we can't not do it.
Yeah. The 10th week in a row, they bought Bitcoin 2,530 for about $230 million. They're now up to 450,000 Bitcoin, which is over 2% of the total amount of Bitcoin will ever be mined. This is now 10 weeks in a row of them buying. And in that 10 weeks, they have accumulated $18 billion worth of Bitcoin. Their goal was, 42 in 3 years? And they've done 18 in 10 weeks.
So I have MicroStrategy listed. MicroStrategy keeps taking a smaller and smaller amount of real estate on my notes page because I'm like, you know, 10 weeks ago, boom, look at this. 8 weeks, bang. $2 billion, this, that, da, da, da. And now I'm like, 2,530 Bitcoin. Okay. I literally, that's all I wrote. MSTR 2530 BTC. Like, that's not a big deal. But then, so as I was kind of going through my Twitter feed, you know, Similar Scientific, they bought 237 Bitcoin, which if it weren't for MicroStrategy would be a big deal. And then there's a Hong Kong company, Ming Xing Group. I don't know what they do, but they bought 500 Bitcoin last week. And so I'm like, man, that's a lot. So you add those up and you're at 3,267 Bitcoin. And this week, 3,150 Bitcoin will be mined. So those three purchases bought all the Bitcoin from the mining reward for the week, and they did it by Monday. So, like, I don't think we're close to a supply shock, but it's going to happen eventually because I mean, we're at a point now where the Bitcoin's getting the miners aren't selling like they used to. People are buying in ways that they're buying a lot more than they used to, and you have big players that are buying more. If the United States really does do a strategic Bitcoin reserve where they're accumulating Bitcoin, and you've got all these other countries that are like under the radar, you know, buying up Bitcoin, it's gonna happen where exchanges are gonna be like calling people like, hey, would you be interested in selling your Bitcoin? We need to add some liquidity into our pool. And then some of the smaller ones have got to just dry up. Like, there's just not going to be enough. So I'm here for it. I might not be this year, but if things keep going this way, I can't imagine that it doesn't happen eventually.
Yeah, when miners are not only mining, but acquiring more Bitcoin by raising capital, like, that says something. That's just different.
Yeah, and the inclusion of these convertible notes that Saylor figured out, which is like a perfect example of how innovation works and why you need the government regulation to loosen up. When Saylor got into Bitcoin, and all he had was $500 million, and he just didn't want it to melt away. And then that led to, let's do some accretive stock dilution and buy more Bitcoin. And that led to just debt at low interest rates. And then that led to convertible notes. You know, I mean, it was like a 4-year evolution of figuring this stuff out. And you don't get to here without buying Bitcoin at that 50,000-60,000 in 2021, and then sitting on it through the bear market, and then, you know, come and surviving and coming through all this. And that's why the regulation is so important, because it just attracts the talent. And then there's going to be companies that start in one direction, and then they figure something out, and then they climb one hill, they get to the top, and then they can see the next hill. So they go across and they climb that hill. Now they're figuring more things out. And then other companies ski in that wake behind the boat. So you got to have good regulation in order to do this stuff. And that kind of flows me into El Salvador is getting Tether's headquarters now.
Really?
So, yeah. So the owners of Tether, they did the Bitcoin citizenship thing that El Salvador opened up to. Yep. And they announced that they're going to move the headquarters. They only have 60 employees. So even if a third of them move, cool. Quite frankly, man, if I was all about crypto and Bitcoin, I would be like, yeah, let's move to El Salvador. Like, I'll learn to surf. It's super cool. There's no hurricanes. Like, it's close to the equator. It's kind of a cool place to be. I think it's a perfect example, right? Get the right regulation in place, be friendly to an industry, the industry shows up. El Salvador's GDP is $34 billion a year. Tether does $10 billion in profit a year. So this is like the United States getting one-third of the GDP, like $10 trillion of inflow. So good. I think it's great. I'm pulling for El Salvador just like I'm pulling for MicroStrategy. And I dig it. I think it's cool. Even if it's just kind of a figurehead and a couple people move down there and it's the headquarters and they get some tax benefits from it. Cool. Let's do it.
Well, that's awesome. And that's funny because Jamie Dimon just kind of came out and said, while he does acknowledge that a digital currency will emerge in the future, he still sees no intrinsic value in Bitcoin. Although the rest of his company is continuing to buy Bitcoin. So it's one of those where do as I say type thing.
Well, and they keep saying the words intrinsic value as though it's oxygen or water. Like, gold doesn't have intrinsic value. You have to think it's valuable to wear as jewelry. And like, okay, there's some industrial use, but it's very easily substituted. Like, you know, to me, this word, nobody really thinks about this phrase. I'm going to throw it out a bunch. But like, the things with the most intrinsic value are air and water, food. Like, it's intrinsic to the, it's valuable because of what it is. Gold can sit underground forever and the people don't know. But you take away oxygen and everybody knows. Like, I'm just tired of politics. Like, I don't think he invented this phrase. I think this is just like an anti-Bitcoin thing from day one, is using the word intrinsic. I'm like, okay, I'll keep using it. It makes you sound dumb.
Yeah. So kind of the opposite of that, Nate Garaci, the president of the ETF store, he released his predictions for 2025. He's predicting 50 new crypto ETFs in 2025, which is pretty crazy. He does think that Litecoin and Hedera will come sooner than Ripple and or XRP and Solana. So Solana actually has a deadline coming up on the 25th of January. Everybody's expecting the SEC to delay those, partially because I think they only really have 2 out of 5 right now.
Why wouldn't you expect them to delay? That's the only thing you should expect.
Yeah, but the second deadline is March 11th. So there's a good chance something could happen by then for Solana. XRP, their president said, which is a lady, she is expecting something very soon because their CEO, Brad Garlinghouse, just met with Trump last week down in Florida, and apparently things went really well there. The other interesting thing that he did mention was that the Bitwise Bitcoin Standard ETF, which is what we talked about, all the companies that hold Bitcoin on their balance sheets and have a market cap over a billion.
I thought it was 1,000. Oh, that's fine. Yeah, 1,000 Bitcoin. Yeah, there was some metric. There's a pretty high bar for now.
Maybe it's 100 million market cap or something like that. But he expects over $1 billion in assets in that ETF in 2025, and that a spot Ethereum options are going to be approved this year too. So, kind of interesting insights from him as well.
Yeah, I think it's not hard for Wall Street and these guys to see, hey, look, there's just an incredible amount of interest and money flowing into the Bitcoin ETFs that continues to flow in. The Ethereum got off to a little bit of a slow start, but based on what I'm seeing from how many ETFs get launched and how most of them get very little funds flow in, especially in the first year, if you started these crypto ETFs and got just small pieces, it's still as good as any ETF that's got a bundle of stocks doing something funky. So I'm all for it. I mean, I'm especially intrigued on like bundling multiple crypto, because ETFs can buy and sell within the ETF and it's not taxable on the backside. So you could, you know, like we had with our top 10 crypto, as things move in and out of the top 10, they could make those trades and you don't have to pay taxes when you sell. And so it could be super beneficial for individuals to get into those and just say, I don't know what's going to win, but I think, you know, everything accumulates at the top. So give me the top 10 and I'll ride that out. And as they drop out, then we sell them, but I don't have to pay capital gains on that sale. So there's definitely some reasons to use ETFs for crypto. And on the Bitcoin side, I think it's obvious. People want to get a hold of Bitcoin, but they just don't want to go through Coinbase or exchanges and self-custody and da-da-da-da-da. And I mean, if you're in California right now, your seed phrase, if you didn't do a good job of multiple locations for your seed phrases, and you could have lost your Bitcoin in a fire, but if it's in an ETF, you didn't. So, you know, there's an argument there, even for these hardcore Bitcoiners. It's like, if you really want to diversify your risk on your Bitcoin exposure, that, you know, you should at least consider the ETFs. And if you're a boomer and that's where all the money is, they're not going to consider buying Bitcoin, you know, and holding it in self-custody and learning wallets and all that stuff. They're struggling to use iPhones.
Yeah. So what was also interesting, you talked about the multi-assets in a single fund. Grayscale just rebalanced their large cap crypto fund. They dropped Avalanche and added Cardano, which I thought was kind of interesting and good to hear, since I'm a Cardano fan. What's interesting too is 90% of that fund is still Bitcoin and Ethereum. So I think we talk about a lot of other coins, or I talk a lot about a lot of other coins. I know you talk about like Bitcoin, but the key point there is most of it should be in Bitcoin and maybe Ethereum, right? If you want to gamble on some of the other stuff, that's fine. But just look at, I mean, Grayscale has 90% in Bitcoin and Ethereum. So 10% they're gambling with-ish. The other 90% is in stuff that is commodities, according to the SEC.
Yeah, I think the part of the ETFs as to why Litecoin will be in the play is because it's proof of work mining, you know, it's kind of been, it's tough to declare it a security. So like, I mean, Litecoin got life left strictly because it's got a chance of getting to Wall Street before the flood of what might be considered securities.
Yeah. So we talked about some of the strategic Bitcoin reserve stuff. I guess in the US, what we didn't really talk a lot about was in other countries. And Bhutan actually has made a very interesting announcement. So they took advantage of front running the US. They had their newly designated special administrative region announce their plans last week to formally adopt digital assets, including not only Bitcoin, but Ethereum and BNB. So, and that's all going to be part of their strategic reserve. So everybody else is talking about going to a Bitcoin strategic reserve. They went to all three, which it wouldn't surprise me if others follow in their footsteps. And it's crazy to hear that Bhutan is like leading the world in crypto adoption right now from a government perspective.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real chance that I've said the word Bhutan more in the last month than I've said or heard in my entire life. Like, but that's what Bitcoin can do for you, man. It's better. It's more advantageous if you're a small player to get in early. One, you're nimble and you can move, and it doesn't, you know, you don't have a giant bureaucracy to tackle through the Department of Justice and everything else and all this bureaucracy that Trump's going to have to go through. But two, you kind of need it more. You know, El Salvador is a dollarized nation that has no control over their currency. And so to me, this is like straight up how it's supposed to work. It helps the small guys. When the big guys jump in, the small guys are already in it. And so as the tide rises, you know, the small boats rise with the big boats. So I'm all about it, man, especially like Bhutan's all about like harmony and peace and happiness and like, yeah, get into Bitcoin. And yeah, I'm a fan that they're jumping into other cryptos. Like BNB stood out to me as a weird one because to me, that's just a corporate coin that is used. It's used to buy other coins on Binance. Like it's the, you know, it basically could easily be replaced by Tether. I feel like BNB was created because Tether was getting transacted to from all these different cryptos into Tether and then bouncing out of Tether and then into other coins back when everything was weird and you couldn't operate on exchanges to trade crypto like that. So I felt like the exchanges made their own coins so that they could extract some transaction fees when people would trade out of Bitcoin and into Ethereum or, you know, into whatever coin. And so, but for BNB to still be around, but that's fine for it to still be around. It's weird that Bhutan added it to their list. It makes me think the Binance guys are in somebody's ear over there.
Well, BNB is pretty much the equivalent to Ethereum, right? So BNB is the Binance Smart Chain gas token that, I mean, all they did was literally copy Ethereum's code base, but put it centralized on Binance's servers so that the gas fees are a lot cheaper. So they're not decentralized like Ethereum. Ethereum had crazy gas fees. BNB has next to nothing for gas fees when you do things. So what you're seeing from Binance is they've been able to be this platform to launch all these tokens, and they do a lot of it on the BNB chain because, one, the rest of the world can use it and at very cheap fees. I mean, everybody outside the US is welcome to use Binance. Binance has been around kind of almost the longest out of everybody out there.
Yeah.
In my opinion, they've done a very good job. So it is, I mean, I'm not a fan that it's centralized, but then again, if you're going to centralize it with somebody, these guys are all in to crypto, right? So they're doing a good job.
And Binance is also fairly, I mean, it's already been through the fires of the United States. Yep. Regulation and all that. I mean, they have U.S. regulators like sitting in their office still, making sure they're doing everything right. So there's probably an element of safety there.
Their regulation team is bigger than almost all other crypto companies out there, right? So I mean, I don't have anything on Binance anymore. I do like Binance, but I think they've been kind of screwed over the past 2 years with everything going on. So. And shoot, CZ, you look at CZ, he was the creator of Binance, and I think he still has a lot of clout in the crypto community, even though he's officially not tied to Binance other than being the largest stakeholder.
Yeah, just like the DOJ allowed the U.S. government to sell the Bitcoin, but they're not involved with the Biden administration.
Yeah. So Thailand was also in the news too. They are planning to trial a crypto payment pilot program in Phuket. The goal is apparently to allow tourists to register their crypto through a Thai exchange and then use it for purchases after identification. And their plan is, I mean, they almost want to use this to build their Bitcoin strategic reserve because they think it's important, but I think they're doing it kind of a weird way, but it is what it is. They want to find a way to get tourists to spend crypto. And I guess they're trying this and then we'll see what happens.
That's exactly right. Try it and see what happens. Like, that's what we should be doing with a brand new industry that's all over the place. And it, quite frankly, tourism's great because, hey, we're going to go to Thailand. Let's turn our dollars into whatever crypto and go use it in Thailand. And then when you come back, you don't have to hold on that crypto, and it's not, you know, it would be a great way to trial things because it's a short-term investment. It's a short-term thing where you're not trying something that's going to wreck somebody. The real risk would be on the receiving side, which is in Thailand, because if that whatever crypto they're doing, if that unravels and falls apart or whatever, if the whole system falls apart, you know, the receiving end is going to be the one that's holding the crypto and holding the risk. So yeah, that's a good way to try it. And it, you know, they could do it like El Salvador, where for the most part, there were a lot of people that just exchange in Bitcoin and then convert at least some of that into dollars to pay bills or do whatever, and then they retain some in Bitcoin. I would be super nervous to use a crypto that was not Bitcoin and if it was a business like this, because I don't have enough confidence in any of the crypto world to know. I mean, I know you disagree, but I still feel like Solana is eating Ethereum up. And I don't know whether they'll pass them from a market cap standpoint or not, but as far as taking some of their revenue away, it's definitely happening. So if you're transacting in Thailand at in a certain crypto, you got to hope that another one that doesn't come up and eat your lunch, because you know, now you're talking about livelihood and not just discretionary investable income.
Well, there's not a ton of details out there on it, but it does seem like it is Bitcoin focused, and it's taking that Bitcoin and changing it into the Thai dollar, whatever that is, right? So kind of like their own version of Strike for Thailand is kind of what I envision. But
yeah, I think that's a safe way to do it.
Yeah, I think we'll see what happens. So speaking of Solana, have you heard of, I guess, what I'll call the MicroStrategy of Solana lately?
No, not think
so. So this is kind of interesting, and I'm amazed that you and I haven't paid much attention to this until now. So Sol Strategies is the name of them. They were formerly called Cypherpunk Holdings, Canadian company. In the last 3 months, they've acquired two separate validator operators. So between those two validator operators, they hold about 1.5 million Sol, which makes them the 65th largest validator out there. They've accumulated about 142,000 Sol, which is about $27 million in today's numbers. They just hired the former Kraken, which is one of the largest exchange out there. He was a director of engineering there. He's now going to be the head of staking for Sol Strategies. They just applied to be listed on NASDAQ. They signed signed with a credit facility to get another $17.3 million to buy Sol. So if you look at when their CEO, Leah Wald, she came in back in September, the stock has shot up 1,700% since September. And I think the big risk for them now is if Sol ETFs do happen, then that's not good, because they're one of the few companies out there that people can get access to Solana through a publicly traded company. So I think their expectation is they'll almost be treated more like a Solana mining stock if that does happen. So pretty cool story, pretty amazing for the past 3 months for them. I'll be intrigued to see what happens. I'm probably not going out to buy them anytime soon, but it's interesting that someone is taking kind of the MicroStrategy playbook, modifying it a little bit and doing it with a different token as well.
Yeah, I mean, when the Bitcoin ETFs, it was supposed to be bad for MicroStrategy when those came out. And MicroStrategy's like, nope, this is good. Price of Bitcoin is going to go up. That helps us. That it bolsters our position and opens our ability to get larger convertible notes. So, you know, from my standpoint, this SOL strategies, it's going to be attractive. And if they have high volatility, then it'll attract the options traders and so on and so on, just like MicroStrategy. So, you know, the value that they would have is not just in the validating SOL, but their stock will see a ton of action because you can have people investing and doing cover calls and all these options strategies that everybody's doing with MicroStrategy that's bolstering the price. I mean, if the Bitcoin ETFs were really attacking MicroStrategy, their net asset value multiple would be one, right? They would be equal to the amount of Bitcoin they hold, and they're in the high ones now, but they've seen 4 and 5. So, you know, there's a reason that MicroStrategy trades 4 times the value of the Bitcoin they hold. It's because there's other value there. And so, yeah, I think it's pretty good. And it's crazy because the bull market really hasn't gone nuts yet.
Yeah.
Like, we're still in this, like, you know, early bull market, you know, slow escalation thing. I mean, we were in $50,000 to $70,000 land, which was pre-bull market stuff. You know, that was just getting back to the previous all-time high, and that was kind of eating through the ETFs and trading coins. And that, to me, the Trump bump that we got from November till now to get from out of that $50,000 to $70,000 trading range and up into the 90s and 100s, like, to me, that's like phase one. And so if they're up 1700%, it's going to go nuts when things actually go nuts.
Yeah, and if you look at the last two bull markets, January's always been down, right? So it's normal, right? This is nothing new. And it's kind of I call it the calm before the storm. I don't know if I would call this calm right now, but it's definitely not exciting.
Well, yesterday was exciting because I woke up and it was like $90,000 Bitcoin. I'm like, what happened? I think it dipped all the way to 89, and then it printed a green candle on the day. Like, it went from 95 to 89 and finished at 95 and changed. Like, so it's not boring, but it does. I really just scratched my head, like, why? Yeah. why did this happen? And of course, whenever there's price action, people make up reasons as to why it happened. And it was like, oh, the bond market. And I'm like, hey, I'm not buying that.
But job, I mean, or interest rates. Yeah, there's still assets out there.
But I'm like, look, I'm right. I just feel like somebody was just trying to drop the price a little bit prior to the inauguration and what's coming, and try to get some more. To me, if we're plummeting down to $90,000 Bitcoin, I can live with that.
Yeah, it's just time to buy more. So we talked a while ago about there was a guy in, I think, the UK or Wales that had accidentally thrown out a hard drive that had about 8,000 Bitcoin on it.
Yeah.
Back in like 2013 or something. He was petitioning the government to allow him to go search through the landfill to go find this. And he was going to share some of the money with the government and yada, yada, yada. Well, the court just put a halt on any plans to retrieve it. So they said now that it's in the landfill, it's their property and he could do nothing moving forward to go after and get it. So that sucks for him. I mean, that's a lot of money. You're talking about $800 million right now, something like that, or close to it, 750, whatever it is, right? It's, yeah, probably, I mean, I've made some mistakes and lost some money, but it doesn't compare to that yet.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, you're talking like, that's like buried treasure, you know, it's in here somewhere. It would be a pretty awesome project for somebody to do. And of course, the government's not going to let it happen. So, yeah. But, you know, maybe the government gets a little recessionary and the government needs some money. And they're like, you know, if we let this guy try, give me 10% on the back end. And, you know, all you have to do, you know, when they're done with landfills, it's just dirt with grass on top and drainage and methane leaking stuff. So, like, what? I don't think you're doing a lot of damage by letting somebody spend $40-50 million chasing 800, and you pick up, and by the time he finds it, it might be $1.6 billion. Like, could be a big deal.
That's a good point, or more.
And if he doesn't find it, he's just got to close it all up.
Yeah. So I haven't we haven't talked a lot about NFTs lately, and there's a couple things related to NFTs that were kind of interesting. So New York is planning to serve a lawsuit to crypto scammers via NFTs, which is kind of intriguing. I mean, this kind of stepping back, people were getting job offers from these scammers and they were told they had to go write a review, but to write a review, they had to go buy the product, and to buy the product, they had to do it with crypto, put it all here and have more crypto in there than the amount of the product. And somehow, like, one lady, and there might be more, got scammed out of like $100,000 because she kept doing this, buying stuff. And I'm like, I mean, at what point does a red flag come up that you paid $100,000 and got nothing back? All right. So they've frozen, I think, $2.2 million in stablecoins. And I guess we'll see what happens with this. But the interesting piece to me is serving them, because they don't know who they are. They're serving them with an NFT to the address that those stablecoins, which I think is kind of really amazing.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's kind of like tracking stuff on the Bitcoin blockchain. Like if somebody does something nefarious, you can kind of back in their wallet. And if they ever use that wallet to tie into a bank account in order to withdraw it, then poof, you got them. So I imagine it's kind of similar to that. Like you kind of, you kind of plant a bug and then wait, but that's pretty much all you could do.
Yeah. The other thing is OpenSea, which I guess used to be one of the largest NFT marketplaces, just had 7 million email addresses exposed. So for anyone that has used OpenSea in the past, you're expect to see a lot more phishing emails come from something like that. And I would say, just as in anything crypto related, make sure you enable two-factor authentication for all of this and don't click on the emails, go directly to the source kind of thing. But that's just, I mean, that's never fun or good to hear anything like that happen.
No, I mean, when like Equifax got hacked, I'm like, everything's up for grabs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Like, there's just no way around it. I mean, like if LifeLock gets hacked, I mean, what you're kind of toast. That's well, welcome to why cryptography is important.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like every month these days I'm getting an email saying, oh, you've been pawned at from this site or that site. So it's crazy how much of your information is probably out there and you have no idea anymore. And then the last thing that I had that was, I'll call it interesting, Trump is launching a new NFT trading cards on Bitcoin ordinals. So I think this is his first foray into ordinals. There's only about 160 of them right now. I think he plans to have 200. In order to even buy them, you have to hold at least 100 of his mugshot edition collection, which is kind of funny too. The cheapest one that apparently has been listed for sale is for $17,000. So I don't know if anybody's actually buying that right now, but that's kind of interesting that it is happening.
Yeah, I don't really like hearing that, but whatever. He seems to be cool to just try stuff, you know, like entrepreneurial, just, hey, what, how much is it going to cost us to try this? What's the upside? What's the downside? Go for it.
I mean, I think the good news, if you're a Trump fan, is that historically everything he's done has been on the Ethereum blockchain. So he is now trying out the Bitcoin blockchain and doing things on there too. So I think the expectation I had was he was going to be very pro Ethereum, and yes, Bitcoin was going to be great, but he would, I mean, look at what World Financial Liberty, whatever that company is, was all kind of based on Ethereum type coins too. So I guess it's good for him to be playing around with Bitcoin and becoming more of a Bitcoin fan as well.
Yeah. Whatever, man, this stuff. This is like my least favorite part. Like,
it's still interesting to know about, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right. So what else did I miss?
So, you know, I talked about how it's not really a bull market yet. And, you know, we're kind of in this early bull stage. And I got a text message from this young guy, probably 26, 27, that is my wife's family. And he was asking about Bitcoin. And so, like, you know, he's in that stage of his career where he's making some money. He's single dude, you know, rents an apartment. So he's got money to invest. He does some Robinhood stuff, and he's bought some Bitcoin and crypto in the past, but without much strategy, you know, just kind of like, I don't think what I still do, which is like, oh, I just feel like I need to buy something today. Like, I got a little extra money, like some dividends paid. I'm just going to buy. Like, for me, I do it because I know if I look back 4 years later, I don't care. He does it because it's, you know, there's not a ton of strategy. You know, guess what? He's young, Tesla stock, buy it, right? I don't know that he's super strong on the technical analysis or any of that, but he's not trading either. He's just accumulating things. So he asked me about, you know, hey, I've got this coming in and I'm looking at doing this. How, you know, what kind of buying strategy makes sense? And he was aware of a lot of the stuff going on with Trump and the politics and everything else. So, you know, it's starting to get a little momentum on the bull market side. You know, it's like not every Uber driver is talking about Bitcoin yet, but I am, you know, every time I get a text from somebody that talks about Bitcoin and what should I do, you know, it's kind of it's a data point for me to say, okay, well, you know, it's kind of creeping into the consciousness of non-Bitcoiners or people that aren't, you know, going through Twitter and have 90% of their feed Bitcoin people. So to me, it's still not really in the news. Like CNBC runs one show that talks about Bitcoin. Fox Business has one thing. But the funny thing is, to change my own subject, the CNBC show with Andrew Sorkin and Joe Squawk Box has completely turned Joe into a big pro Bitcoiner. Like, he almost trash talks people when they come on and don't support Bitcoin. So like, over the course of his job, just having to talk and pay attention to Bitcoin a little bit, and have people like Pompliano, and they had Saifedean on in the last month or so. And so he's kind of orange-pilled himself through his job, because he's like the advocate, Bitcoin advocate on the show now. So it's pretty fun to see that stuff. I mean, it's like the Venn diagram where no one that understands the difficulty adjustment thinks that Bitcoin will fail. Like, as soon as you know enough about Bitcoin, then you're, you know, nobody sells their Bitcoin once they understand it. So I feel like that's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, it seems to me that the younger generation is definitely starting to pick up on it a lot more. My nephew, who just got a job in the past year or two, I was talking to him over the holidays, and he's like, yeah, anytime I have extra money, I'm buying as much Bitcoin as I can right now. I was like, good for awesome. You. Smart.
Yeah. So, yeah, I gave some advice. I had a nephew who graduated college and got married in the same week, and he's a successful dude. He's runs side gigs, and I mean, he sold like 12,000 copies of a video game he made on Stream or Steam. And so he's got like side gig money. He's got a real job that pays well. And he's like, well, we're trying to buy a house and this and that. You know what to do? I was like, well, here's what I would do. And this includes, you need to put some money in Bitcoin. I don't care how much, but like, if you're going to plan on having kids, just consider it their college fund. Like a 20-year Bitcoin investment is ideal. Yeah. Like, just go ahead and put some down, and you know, like, honestly, for these young guys, man, this is like the one thing they can buy. Like, real estate is probably just it's tough to chase, but you can buy any amount of Bitcoin. And you know, on the stock side, man, the amount of time you gotta spend to play the stock game at a real level, it's so much time. It's tough to have a full-time job that you're young and you're learning and you're trying to get better. And it's a full-time job to figure out the stock market, because you don't understand finance that well. And you certainly, you know, you like, I like this company, and you look at it and you're like, dang, this thing tanked. Why did that happen? Oh, there's some weird options expiration date that happens to have a whole bunch of open interest. There's no way, right? It's super hard. So to me, buy a little Bitcoin and just keep chugging along. 20 years later, you'll be happy you did it.
I think that's a good way to end it. That's a good life lesson for everybody right there.
All right, cool, man.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Al. I appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Thanks.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.